Returning now to the article by Howard Goldenthal and Russ Ballant, Balkan Nationalists Peddling Fascism. And this section of the article is entitled Ethnic Separatism Returns to Czechoslovakia. Slovakian exiles in Canada are playing a key role in trying to bring about a separate Slovak Republic modeled on the one formed in March of 1939 by the extreme right cleric and Nazi collaborator Josef Tiso. Tiso oversaw the transportation of thousands of Slovak Jews to German death camps. He was executed in 1947 by the non-communist government of Edward Beneš, B-E-N-E-S. Some of Tiso's friends were more fortunate. Assisted by the Vatican and U.S. and British intelligence, many former officials of the collaborationist Linke Party were smuggled west and quietly renewed their political activities. Linke is H-L-I-N-K-A. In 1971, uranium magnate Steve Roman, R-O-M-A-N, formed the Slovak World Congress in Toronto with the help of Linke collaborators like Ferdinand Durkansky, D-U-R-C-A-N-S-K-Y, the Nazi foreign minister sentenced to death for treason, and his underling Josef Kirschbaum, K-I-R-S-C-H-B-A-U-M, on the run from a 20-year sentence for his role as secretary general of the party. The Vatican has maintained its close connections with the Linke Front Group. In 1984, while on a visit to Canada, Pope John Paul II took time out of his busy schedule to visit Roman's Cathedral, located just outside of Toronto. Roman died in 1988. Last March, Reverend Dusan Toth, D-U-S-A-N-T-O-T-H, Secretary General of the Slovak World Congress, addressed a crowd of nearly 100,000 supporters in Bratislava. Toth, former head of Protestant religious programming for Radio Free Europe, found rightist separatism still a potent force in Slovakia. Elsewhere, Toth's message and activities would be considered a threat to national security, but last February, Toth was appointed a member of a group of foreign advisors to President Václav Havel. That last couple of sentences again. Last March, Reverend Dusan Toth, T-O-T-H, Secretary General of the Slovak World Congress, addressed a crowd of nearly 100,000 supporters in Bratislava. Toth, former head of Protestant religious programming for Radio Free Europe, found rightist separatism still a potent force in Slovakia. Elsewhere, Toth's message and activities would be considered a threat to national security, but last February, Toth was appointed a member of a group of foreign advisors to President Václav Havel. Last May, Alexander Dubček, D-U-B-C-E-K, Havel's vice president, visited Toronto and attended a meeting of the Slovak World Congress. Dubček, a Slovak, is best known as the leader of Czechoslovakia's Prague Spring in 1968. Dubček's liberalization program was smashed when Moscow ordered troops into Prague and the government was overthrown. Number of key points to highlight in this particular article. First and foremost, it's worth noting that the Slovak World Congress basically is a vehicle for the perpetuation of the fascist Slovakian Linke Party, which collaborated with the Nazis. Again, the Linke Party was the body, just like the Ustashi in Yugoslavia that were in Croatia that we're going to look at later, that was used by the Nazis to dominate this particular part of their empire. And it's worth noting that Steve Roman founded the Slovak World Congress in Toronto with the help of two key Linke figures. One, again, Ferdinand Durkansky, the Nazi foreign minister sentenced to death for treason, and one of his associates, Josef Kirschbaum, who was also on the run from a 20-year sentence for his role as Secretary General of the Linke Party. The Vatican has maintained good relations with this organization, and it's worth noting, too, that Reverend Dusan Toth, Secretary General of the Slovak World Congress, has basically been appointed a foreign advisor to President Václav Havel. Formerly, he was head of Protestant religious programming for Radio Free Europe, an organization basically founded by Reinhard Galen. We went into Galen's role in founding Radio Free Europe, although he worked very closely with Frank Wisner. We covered that in Radio Free America program number 3. And it's worth noting here that Václav Havel has basically been playing footsie with these very individuals who now are so enraged at him. And we should not forget also that Alexander Dubček, his vice president, attended a meeting of the Slovak World Congress, basically a front organization for the Linke Party, It's also worth wondering about exactly whether Dubček is the liberal and the Democrat that he is represented as being. He's not a person I know that much about. It was very tragic when the liberalization program he introduced in Czechoslovakia was crushed. It's worth noting, too, that one of Reinhard Galen's last acts as the official head of the BND before he retired, although he continued to be very active with BND, one of his last official acts was to predict to the hour the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia. One wonders how much he might have had to do with provoking that very same invasion. Again, I don't know very much about Alexander Dubček, but I think his willingness to rub elbows with the Slovak World Congress is something that's worth looking into. One of the questions I have about the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia is whether elements like the Slovak World Congress, well, it would not have been in existence in 68, but whether former Linka elements or people associated with it were infiltrated into Czechoslovakia or were in Czechoslovakia to begin with and were elevated to a position of power in order to provoke just exactly such a crackdown. It is one of my theories that among the major roles intended for the fascists being reintroduced into Lithuania, the OUN, and other fascist elements that are being elevated in the Soviet Union, largely as the result of the activities of organizations like the Free Congress Foundation, it's worth noting here that one of the goals, I believe, of infiltrating those people into the Soviet Union and boosting them to prominence is to provoke a crackdown. With the tremendous loss of life and suffering that the USSR experienced during the Second World War, the reascendance of fascists and Nazi collaborators is not something that's going to be viewed lightly, and the sort of heavy-handed crackdown that we saw in Czechoslovakia is something which might be repeated at some point in the not-too-distant future, quite possibly inside the Soviet Union. Certainly, it is inconceivable that they would continue to, not inconceivable, but it would be remarkable if they continued to tolerate the presence of this type of individual and these types of activities. I would bet at some point, I don't know when, but I would be willing to bet at some point there will be a crackdown, and probably a pretty heavy and brutal one under the circumstances. One wonders to what extent that may actually be the goal of the people who are infiltrating and elevating individuals and institutions like this. Returning once again to this particular article, Balkan Nationalists Peddling Fascism, we're now going to take a look at the Croatian Ustashi, the Croatian Nazi collaborators that we will be going into at considerable length at the end of the broadcast, or during the last section of the broadcast, I should say. Continuing with Goldenthal and Balant's article, another Nazi collaborator and separatist who came back from the West looking for a state was Ivo Omerkanin, and I'm not sure how his last name is pronounced, Omerkanin, an official during the war with the Foreign Ministry of the State of Independent Croatia. After the war, Omerkanin helped other Nazis, including Ustasha President Ante Pavelic, P-A-V-E-L-I-C, and Klaus Barbie, escape to Latin America. While in the U.S., Omerkanin took part in events sponsored by the quasi-Nazi Institute for Historical Review. Interrupting, that's an organization which denies that the Holocaust, the Nazi massacre of European Jews, actually happened. Continuing. In an interview with the Yugoslav magazine ST, Omerkanin said he had returned to Croatia to register a new political party. He blamed Jews for massacres against Croatians during the war. He claimed Jasenovac, a concentration camp set up to handle Jews and Serbs, was a Hollywood production. Quote, "You can see how big of an imagination these Jews have when they make cartoons. Those are all made by Jews." Jasenovac, by the way, is Jasenovac. We will take a look at the associates of Omerkanin and the Jasenovac and just exactly what did go down there. What didn't go down there was a Jewish massacre of Croatians, quite the reverse. We will be taking a look at the terrible activities of the Ustashi at considerable length and in detail later on in the broadcast. Suffice it to say that with the opening up of Eastern Europe, the Ustashi, like these other Eastern European fascists, have taken advantage of the situation to plunge themselves in up to the elbow. Next, we're going to return briefly to a section of the Soviet Union. We have spoken at considerable length in this series, in this archive show, about the OUN Bandera. We looked at it last week, and in the installment before that, we also took a look at OUN Bandera in Radio Free America number 1, Radio Free America shows 14 and 15, and also the miscellaneous archive series, the Nazis and Anti-Semites on George Bush's campaign. Well, the OUN is also, courtesy of, among others, the aforementioned Free Congress Foundation, Foundation, very active in the Ukraine today, and we're going to take a look at their activities in the Ukraine right now. In a section of the article called Separatist Organizing in the Ukraine, Ballant and Goldenthal write as follows. Right-wing separatists have become active in the Ukraine with help from Ukrainian Americans. As in the 1930s, the separatist banner is carried by the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN. During the war, the OUN collaborated with the Nazi occupation politically and militarily and participated in the elimination of Ukrainian Jews. After the war, OUN militants were recruited to carry out a clandestine war against the USSR. Others found their way to the West, where they resumed political activity. Since the war, the OUN has been the backbone of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, or ABN, a coalition including the Iron Guard and the Linke Party. The OUN and the ABN have been leading public opponents of the Office of Special Investigations. By the way, that's a Justice Department body that has been looking into the importing of Nazi war criminals into the United States. Not as much as they should have, but they have been relatively active, at least in terms of when compared with the open collaboration that our intelligence services and national security establishment have engaged in vis-a-vis these types of individuals, the Office of Special Investigations, at least nominally and to a certain extent, has attempted to reverse, albeit far too late, that kind of activity. Their activities, as I said, came far too late because the United States, as I will be talking about this coming April 13th, has lost the Second World War. Continuing now with this particular section of the article, for the young, OUN has a new organization called the Union of Independent Ukrainian Youth, inspired by the wartime OUN leader, Stepan Bandera, B-A-N-D-E-R-A. We looked at him last week. In addition, right-wing Ukrainian Americans were involved in the March elections. Ashko Lozinski, L-O-Z-Y-N-S-K-I-J, General Counsel for the OUN-dominated Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, and other activists were sent by the Washington-based Free Congress Foundation. Well, of course, we looked at Charles Moser and his connections to the Ukrainian Quarterly and the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America in the article dealing with the Free Congress Foundation Goes East. Reviewing again from the Free Congress Foundation Goes East, the FCF is not entirely disconnected from the history of the OUN. The treasurer of the FCF board is George Washington University professor Charles Moser. Moser also serves on the editorial advisory board of the Ukrainian Quarterly, published by the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, a group dominated by the OUN. It is the Ashko Lozinski, and I'm not sure how his name is pronounced, is general counsel for the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America and was sent by the Free Congress Foundation. So their continuity with the OUN remains intact and is obviously ongoing. We're now going to review briefly some more information that we have touched on, and this concerns Laszlo Pastor, another individual who has been tapped by the Free Congress Foundation, and he was a member of the Arrow Cross, the Hungarian Fascist Party, which, like the Linke Party, like the Ustashi, and like the Iron Guard, collaborated with the Nazis and enthusiastically participated in the Nazi atrocities of World War II. They also, obviously, jumped to CIA and other Western intelligence organizations and are also very active with the ABN, the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. In a section that Ballant and Goldenthal call Hungary's Arrow Cross, the FCF was also involved in the March elections in Hungary. In a bitter contest, the Democratic Forum, the party which would eventually win the contest, used anti-Semitic slurs against its rival, the Alliance of Free Democrats. Aid for the forum has come from far-right Hungarians exiled in the U.S., including Laszlo Pastor, a youth leader of the Arrow Cross during the Second World War. The Arrow Cross was Hungary's Nazi party which came to power in 1944. Pastor served 5 years in a Hungarian prison after the war for his wartime activities at the Hungarian embassy in Berlin. A Nazi past proved no great obstacle to success in the U.S. Pastor was selected by Richard Nixon in 1969 to recruit rightists from other Eastern European communities to work for the Republican Party. Some of those recruited were committed Nazis. One of them, Boleslav Mikovskis, B-O-L-E-S-L-A-V-S, M-I-K-O-V-K-I-S, a former Latvian police officer, was accused by the Office of Special Investigations of being a war criminal. In 1988, Pastor was one of 6 members of the Bush Election Committee forced to resign because of their Nazi affiliations. Pastor now directs the Free Congress Foundation's East European activities. He also has advised the National Endowment for Democracy on funding Hungarian political parties. The FCF sent a team to Hungary to teach the Democratic Forum election techniques. So bear in mind this connection between the Democratic Forum, or New Democratic Forum, as it's also called, and the Hungarian fascist Arrow Cross, and in particular, Arrow Cross veterans from the United States, including and especially the FCF and National Endowment for Democracy-sponsored Laszlo Pastor, have been very active in Hungary with the New Democratic Forum. We will be taking a look at the also inappropriately named New Democratic Forum. What they're involved with ain't new, and it sure ain't democratic. We will be taking a look at them presently. The last two sections here of the Ballant and Goldenthal article, once again returning to the Soviet Union, in a section of the article termed, title, I should say, Latvian Activities, they write, "Only recently have far-right activists managed to get into the Soviet bloc. In October of 1988, the Soviet Union prevented Latvian exiles from Canada and the U.S. from attending the founding convention of the Latvian People's Front. One of those prevented from boarding the plane was Linards Lukss, L-U-K-S-S, chair of the World Federation of Free Latvians." That last sentence again, and I'm not sure about the pronunciation of many of these Eastern European names, so you'll have to bear with me. "One of those prevented from boarding the plane was Linards Lukss, L-U-K-S-S, chair of the World Federation of Free Latvians. Lukss, a Toronto physician, is well known in anti-communist circles. He is the president of the Captive Nations Committee in Canada, an organization closely affiliated with the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. Lukss' cleverest accomplishment to date was to help found the International Black Ribbon Day Committee in 1986, a Toronto-based operation which is officially opposed to both Nazism and Communism, but welcomes the support and participation of the Linka-dominated Slovak World Congress, the OUN-dominated World Congress of Free Ukrainians, and the far-right Hungarian Freedom Fighters World Federation." The last section of the article is called Why? And it reads, "Whether the political activities of these organizations and individuals will gain a following in Eastern Europe or the Soviet Union is debatable. What the U.S. seeks by promoting them ought to be subject to open debate. The silence is deafening." One more time. "Whether the political activities of these organizations and individuals will gain a following in Eastern Europe or the Soviet Union is debatable. What the U.S. seeks by promoting them ought to be subject to open debate. The silence is deafening." Well, obviously, I have held forth at considerable length in this series about what I think the United States is doing by supporting organizations and individuals like this in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. And obviously, we've seen a considerable degree of continuity between the organizations used to promote these individuals and organizations, both in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union, the Free Congress Foundation, the National Endowment for Democracy, in turn organizations that they have promoted involved with the anti-Bolshevik nations, organizations like the Residual Iron Guard, the Linka Party, the Slovak fascist collaborators from Czechoslovakia, the Arrow Cross of Hungary, the fascist collaborators from Latvia. We will be taking a look at the Ustasha. We've touched on those already. We'll be taking a look at them at considerable length, as well as the OUN and some of the Lithuanian fascists that we looked at in earlier installments of this broadcast. It is my belief that there are more, certainly the U.S. national security establishment is anything but monolithic, and it should be noted that there are undoubtedly elements of our national security establishment that would not like to see institutions and individuals like this come to ascendancy. It should also be noted that there are elements, in my opinion, that although they are willing to play ball with organizations like this, are actually doing this to provoke the Soviets and begin a new Cold War. Because certainly there is going to come a point at which the activities of individuals and organizations like this are simply not going to be tolerated. I don't know when that point is going to come, but I wouldn't be surprised if it came pretty soon. There are many elements of our national security establishment that, although they would not support the fascism and anti-Semitism of organizations like this, are quite willing to use them as basically provocateur. It is my opinion that they would love to see the Soviets crack down on individuals and institutions like this, and they may very well be using them for that reason. They, in a sense, are being used as cannon fodder. Then, of course, there are many prominent elements in this country, but not only of our national security establishment, but many industrialists and financiers as well, who are of fascist and anti-Semitic sympathies and would like to see nothing better than the return to power of people like the Iron Guard, the Arrow Cross, the Linke Party, etc. So it's worth bearing in mind that there are more than one, in all probability, are more than one motivational factor behind the support of the United States and the other so-called Western democracies for the activities of individuals and organizations like this. We're going to take a musical break now, and then we're going to come back and we're going to take a look at the effects of, the opening up of Eastern Europe politically, and quite possibly the effects of the activities of some of these individuals in that part of the world. We're going to take a look at an article from Newsweek magazine talking about the return or the resurgence of anti-Semitism in Eastern Europe, and that return, that resurgence is very evident, and we're going to be looking at some of the same elements that we've already taken a look at. The New Democratic Forum in Hungary, we're going to take a look at the National Christian Peasants Party in Romania, and some of the same organizations that we have already seen in conjunction with ABN, Free Congress Foundation, etc. Music and then more of tonight's archive show.